Welcome to Beyond Standards, your source for authentic discussions about the world of teaching. Get ready to explore challenges, share inspiring stories, and discover strategies that will empower you to make a lasting impact on your students. Here are your hosts, who are trying to master the fine art of maintaining their sanity while managing a classroom, Joe Rohrhoff and Jeff Bologna.
Welcome back to all you amazing teachers out there to episode 9 of the Beyond Standards podcast. And this episode is a continuation of what we talked about last week. And we had Justin Bruno on last week. And Justin is back with us to talk about artificial intelligence in the classroom. And I can tell you, Jeff and I were just blown away after last week's conversation, just listening to him talk. Jeff, what were your thoughts on that?
My head is still spinning after our conversation last week with Justin. And I told you at the beginning of episode 8 that I'm just going to kind of sit back and listen and turn it over to our so-called expert on AI. And that's what we did. And it was awesome. And I'm just so grateful that you know Justin, you were able to come back and join us. Now maybe we can try to turn it more, give some teachers some specific tips and tools and things that they can use, or maybe talk about some of those concerns that teachers might have.
Our mission today is to give some of those specific tools. We mentioned it last week, and everything seemed to be student-centered last week, or at least for a good portion of it, student-centered. And I know we're going to get some more specific teacher tools and strategies that teachers can use inside the classroom. Jeff, you want to give them a real quick intro before we head into some more questions?
Right. So if anybody missed last week's episode, we're joined by Justin Bruno. He's the Assistant Director of District Programming for Michigan Virtual. Has worked, you know, in the education world for, you know, over a decade. Prior to that, was an eighth grade social studies teacher, and has kind of been on the cutting edge, front edge of the this ChatGPT that's only been around for, you know, just about a year now. So Justin, again, thank you for joining us this evening.
Absolutely. Thank you guys for having me back. I appreciate it.
So let's jump right into what our audience wants to hear, and that is the teacher side of it. What are some general benefits for teachers? To simplify this question, how could AI make my life easier as a teacher?
Yeah, I highly recommend checking out ChatGPT or even some of the more purpose-built tools for teachers. So we talked a little bit last week, Magic School, Diffit, and EduAid are some of those that make the kind of barrier to entry a little bit lower for teachers, really kind of easy on-ramp in terms of asking or presenting you with, as a teacher, what are you really trying to create or accomplish? So lesson plans, I think, is probably the most widely used thing that people are using these tools for. Lesson plans are a necessary part of teaching, but I think a lot of times they're a real like burdensome part of teaching. There's also, you know, the question about not just writing your lesson plans, but using these to write like really good lesson plans. I think we talked a little bit last week about this kind of like 80-20 rule, or, you know, overcoming the blank page problem. You can use ChatGPT or some of these other tools to write a lesson plan in a very specific format that you might give it. But spending a little bit of extra time with that output to make tweaks to its output and really kind of refine and craft that lesson plan based on what you're looking for is a really good way, I think, as a, like a first thing for teachers to think about doing with some of these tools. I've also heard people basically kind of feed like some of their old lesson plans to ChatGPT and say like, my students struggled with this, and here are some of my hypotheses about why they struggled. Can you give me some ideas on how to change that lesson plan or change that project or assignment based on that, right? So it's almost acting like as a teacher peer for you in some ways, and giving you some feedback and ideas for suggestions or improvement. I've heard, and this is a little bit more of a controversial thing, like I've heard people using ChatGPT to grade and some other tools like this to grade, right? So if you can, it does take a little bit of work to really like train, I'll call it training, to train ChatGPT to like grade something with some specific criteria that you might give it. You could give it a rubric or just kind of general criteria and kind of a points breakdown, and then copy and paste information into it and ask it to like provide feedback on that pasted information. That's a way to kind of like use it to grade. I think, you know, we as educators should still be trying to give really good feedback and not having ChatGPT like grade our students' work, right? Because we're the experts and we're the people that have formed a relationship with those students that they really value our input, or should value our input. But you know, there is a way to kind of like speed up some of that grading. I think about like, you know, having to grade 120 essays as an English teacher, like it could really take a lot of the grunt work away in terms of like a first look or first review out of some of those papers. And then you can spend more of your time giving more substantive feedback on specific pieces and building on what the AI kind of said. I don't know if I mentioned in the last episode, one of the other like really more capable chatbots is called Claude, so Claude. And what's nice about Claude, even the free version, is you can attach PDF files into the prompt, and people call this kind of like a talk to your data approach. So you can ask Claude to kind of like give some analyses or summaries of that PDF that you uploaded. So if you've got like student work like that is in a PDF format, you can ask Claude to give some high-level overviews or feedback on that student work. Claude also has what's called a really long context window. So what you can copy and paste into Claude is much bigger and much longer than what you could in ChatGPT and some of these other tools too. I hear a lot about teachers and educators using it to write recommendation letters. So, you know, that's a really cumbersome thing for teachers, especially if you're writing a lot of them, right?
Yeah, it's a good starting point at least.
Yeah, exactly. Great starting point. So if you know and have built a relationship with a student, you could even, again, caution people against using people's or students' names, but have ChatGPT write the first draft of a recommendation letter for a student, and give ChatGPT or whatever other tool you're using context, like a recommendation letter for a job in this field or for admission to this specific university or this specific program. And it'll do a really good job at writing the first draft. And then you as the teacher can make it more personalized. And that could just cut down on a lot of time for you in that way too. I recommend just starting with like going to Magic School, seeing all the different tools. They've got like 40 out of the box tools. So recommendation letters, quiz generators, lesson plan generators, all kinds of things that, again, will hopefully make teachers' lives a little bit easier in the short term.
Yeah, I think you covered the next question I was going to ask was like, how do we get started with all this stuff? You know, we did, Joe and I, we participated in the PD, and I messed around a little bit with, copy and pasting a rubric in and then copy and pasting a paragraph. And I felt like it was cumbersome, but it was able to give some feedback, but again, it wasn't, authentic feedback, that I would have given based on the student and things like that. How should teachers get started? I think you just said, mess around with those kind of things. Is there any types of training, professional development, or anything that you would suggest for teachers out there that want to get started in this?
Hey, before Justin answers that, let a rookie take a shot at it. And just my advice, what I've learned is to just mess with it. Just mess with it. When I first learned about ChatGPT, I'm sure Justin can give some more specific resources, but if you go out there and I started doing last year what Justin, said, hey, type your lesson plan into it. And I started typing stuff in just to see, hey, could a kid just use ChatGPT to complete this assignment? And I thought I had an assignment that a student couldn't, but I was just messing with ChatGPT, and I asked it to write an acrostic poem about the Lewis and Clark journey in chronological order from start to finish, and which is basically the assignment I give the kids. And it did a pretty close job. It wasn't perfect with everything, but I learned so much just by jumping into the tool and messing with it. But that would be my piece of advice. But Justin, I'll let you build on that one.
I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say. Like, you really don't know what.
Yeah, yeah. Joe got it. Joe, you should be the guest.
Nailed it.
You really don't know what these things can do until you spend a considerable amount of time with them. And this moment in time that we're in right now is so weird, because these technologies do amazing things, but they are really, really weird. Like, we talked about hallucinations last time. They make up facts. Sometimes they'll even say, like, oh, I can't do that for you. Like, whatever you're asking it to do, to execute a function. A lot of people use ChatGPT to help them write code and things like that. Sometimes, because they are programmed to, like, interact with you like a human, they will say things like, I can't do that. I don't know how to do that. Like, ChatGPT will literally say that. And then there are documented examples and researchers who have said, like, back to the chatbot, yes, you can. Take a deep breath, think really hard, maybe think about the discrete steps you need to take to accomplish this task, and then try. And then it'll do it. they don't know why that happens. That's the funny part. Like, even the programmers don't know why it kind of engages in these weird human-like behaviors sometimes. So you really don't know, like, what it can do until you spend time with it, and then, like, even push back on it. I compare ChatGPT to, like, an intern. Like, it's an intern who doesn't know a lot. You might ask an intern to do something, and their work might never be really all that close to what you want, but if you spend time with that intern and giving it feedback. Or another tip I give people is to, if you're using ChatGPT or, like, another chatbot model, you can say to it, like, here's what I'm trying to do. Just explain your goal in really plain terms and purposes. And then you can tell the chatbot, like, I want you, ChatGPT or Claude, to ask me the questions that you need answer to be successful in the task that I'm giving you. And it'll come back and ask, like, questions for you to kind of, like, flesh out more of that context and give details to what it's trying to do. So just really weird, simple, like, it's not really simple, but really weird, like, nuanced experiences like that, I think are really important to work with those systems. In terms of PD, there's some great resources out there that are a lot of times free. So Michigan Virtual has a couple courses specifically about ChatGPT. So we have a professional learning portal where we basically just give people tons of resources to read, and we help them set up an account with ChatGPT and give some specific tasks, like on what to create with ChatGPT, and then post in a discussion board. So you can see how, like, hundreds of other teachers are using it and what they're creating with it too. There's a group called Teach AI, which is it's made up of a number of different organizations, including Khan Academy and code.org. Those folks have really good resources, lesson plans, PD for folks as well. And then the other one is AIEDU. That's another one that I recommend people check out. So good resources and lesson plans, both for students and for teachers, and a lot of good, like, free PD and resources too. So the other thing I was going to point out too is that, so you mentioned, Jeff, like, when you were asking it to give some feedback and it wasn't giving, like, good feedback on student work, most people are using the free version of ChatGPT, and it's a pretty big difference in terms of, like, what the paid version can do and what the free version can do.
Okay.
So, like, this is not an endorsement to go out and pay for ChatGPT Plus, but if you look at, like, the test results and the benchmarks that they have for these systems, it's a really big jump. Like, ChatGPT 4, the paid version, it's like scoring in the 90th percentile on the bar exam. Like, it's writing, like, incredibly sharp and insightful and human sounding things and more authentic things. Just a little tip for folks, for listeners, you can get access to the GPT-4, the more kind of most cutting edge model, if you go to Microsoft Copilot, and if you have a Microsoft account, you can use the Copilot chatbot, but you have to make sure that you select what's called creative mode. It's not the default. Creative mode in Microsoft Copilot gives you much better output than the free version of ChatGPT. So I suggest people check that out and see if they can kind of get some better results playing around with that one as well.
Thank you for that. That's great info, Justin. You know, and as we're, you know, talking about this and trying to get teachers started, and, you know, myself included, Joe, you're way farther along than I am. What are some,
as usual.
Yeah, of course. What are some common like misconceptions or concerns that you hear from teachers about incorporating AI? I think we talked about it last week about cheating and plagiarism, but what are some of the common misconceptions that teachers have, or, you know, reservations they have about using AI, and how can these be addressed?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the biggest ones is that, like, you know, these systems are just regurgitating information, right? Or that it's a lot like Google, where it's just spitting back information that is unvetted and is not, you know, it could be some rando on like Reddit, right, or something, like, yeah, giving an answer, right? Like the especially the more capable systems, they are trying to kind of like give to the best extent possible, like really accurate information and synthesis of information and those sorts of things. So I think about it like, you know, how Wikipedia was not an acceptable form of like,
yeah,
citation.
For sure. I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And over time, like, we kind of proved, like, I probably wouldn't have bet on it that like Wikipedia would be a good source of information, but over time, and because of human moderators, like, Wikipedia is a pretty reliable and good source of information.
I hope none of my students are listening to this episode right now, because I still tell them, do not go to Wikipedia. I'm stuck 15 years ago. Like, you know, yeah, don't go to Wikipedia.
and that's totally fair, I think, in like an academic setting or educational setting. But like, as you know, an everyday human user, like,
oh, every day.
Yeah, I'm on Wikipedia every day, right? And I don't really have a ton of doubts about, you know, the factuality of a lot of the information I'm reading, just because of the strength of the moderation community there. I think we'll get there over time with AI. It still spits out like really unreliable information, but it is not like just, you know, pulling from websites and kind of other random information. It's doing its best to kind of like make the most correct generation of output. So I think that's one misconception I hear a lot about. The other one, I think, is just like, you know, we talked about cheating and plagiarism and how this was going to like just unlock Pandora's box for cheating and plagiarism. But I think schools have done a pretty good job, like in the US, of stigmatizing cheating. So if you talk to students, a lot of them, even if they use ChatGPT, they think it's cheating. Like, and they kind of don't want to get caught using it or use it as a, you know, a reliable source of work and information. So I don't see that, you know, cheating is just going to run rampant because ChatGPT exists now. I think we'll always have some problems with cheating, and, you know, that bar will go up and down over time. But you know, I guess that's one misconception I would try to help people understand, is like, students feel a certain way about it once they play around with it. And they also, I think, for the most part, don't want to take shortcuts on their work. If we've motivated them enough, and if we've engaged them enough, like, they also see this as a potential shortcut that they don't want to take, because it's shortchanging themselves a lot of times too, if they do that.
Yeah, I spoke with a former student of mine who's in college now, not too long ago, and I don't know how the topic came up, but we were talking about, oh, the student had a big paper that was due. The topic of, oh, ChatGPT came up, and he said, no, he's like, if you get caught using that, you're done. Like, you're out. So at least at the university that student's at, they have talked about, you know, that they know the consequences of it, and they know that it's cheating. They know that, you know, when it's okay and not okay to use.
Yeah. And I think, like, I listened to a podcast a few months ago, and there are a lot of college students talking about how they use it, and they wouldn't go on the record with their names. They wouldn't say like that they were using it, but the way they talked about it was like, you know, they were clearly using it in an educational setting where it was transactional. Like, they just needed to complete the assessment, get their grade, get their degree, and be done, right? K-12 is a lot different. Like, we're not To some extent, you know, some kids are just trying to get their diploma and be done, but kids, you know, are compelled to be there, and they generally, you know, want to make the best use of their time while they're there. They want to have fun and they want to reap the social benefits of being in school. It's a little bit less transactional at a K-12 level, right? You're still kind of very much having school as a social experience. Yeah. So, I think that's an important thing to consider, right? Like, kids aren't just going to go and use ChatGPT just to get the transaction done. Like, they also, you know, they want to have some kind of authentic experience in school too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And while we're talking about misconceptions, I heard it was at one of the PD sessions I was at, I heard a teacher bring this up, and I'm curious to your thoughts on it. And the teacher said something to the effect of, I'm not going to use ChatGPT to lesson plan or to, you know, help me write a recommendation letter or whatever, because I'm not asking my students not to do it. So I'm not going to do it. Can you speak to the difference between a teacher, a professional using it versus a student?
Yeah, I think that's a valid choice. I'm not that opposed to that kind of approach, right? If you are that, kind of worried about the potential shortcuts that students could use, then I think it's fair to say, like, I as a professional should not be trying to take those shortcuts. And it goes back to what we were talking about last week around, like, performance versus learning, right? I think, you know, if you ask somebody who works at a consulting firm, or you ask somebody who works at a general white collar job, like, they're going to want to use these tools every single day, and they don't have to worry so much about, like, you know, what kind of example they're setting for students, because it helps them get their job done. Right. So, I think in teaching, it's a much different story. And if you feel comfortable with kind of not leaning on these tools to help you do some of that work, that's fine. I do think, though, you have to walk that fine line of, if we're not allowing students to use them for certain assignments or assessments and things like that, you probably don't want to have kids who don't know how to use the internet, because when they go to work, they're going to be asked to use the internet. If they finish school, they're going to be using the internet to use their job, right? To do their job. So, you know, how do we kind of allow them to experiment and play with them and give them, like, good guardrails, even if it's not to complete schoolwork, but it's just to kind of, like, let them know that these tools are out there, they're being widely used, and maybe even expected to be used in certain work settings too.
Yeah. And my own personal opinion on that is, I have, there's only so many hours in the day, right? And I can only devote so many of those hours to my students. And if I can take care of some of the more tedious tasks and focus on maybe more authentic grading or spending more time in the classroom with the students themselves, then that's, you know, then ChatGPT, whatever time it saved me so I can use my time to do more important things, I think is 100% benefit, not just to me, but to the students as well.
Yeah. Just a really quick, funny story. Like, I was trying to show my wife, who's an elementary art teacher, like, ChatGPT vision, which means, like, you can take a picture of something and ask ChatGPT to, like, any questions you have about that picture. So I took a picture of, like, an Eric Carle illustration, and I was like, tell me why this is an aesthetically pleasing drawing. And it broke down the technique that was used and, you know, what was seen in the image and things like that. And I was like, hey, Nora, check this out. Isn't this really cool? And she just looks at me and she goes, that's cheating. I was like, okay, fair enough. Like, you've put your foot down. I understand. And then a little while later, I was showing her Diffit, the tool that we talked about earlier.
Yep.
And she was like, oh, can you send me that? like she clearly saw the benefit in that and the AI, use of AI for that, and not necessarily for the first thing I showed her. So yeah, it's going to be different depending on what we're trying to accomplish and, you know, how we feel about it in our own philosophy.
No, absolutely. Do you have any success stories, real life examples of, schools using or teachers effectively using AI?
So it's really small sample size right now. Most schools are, like, being really cautious. You see folks banning it or blocking it. I've talked to some teachers. Like, I talked to a teacher in Howell who I think was an AP language teacher who was using it for a ton of stuff, like grading and generation of assignments and just what he called kind of like grunt work. And he basically said, if I'm going to use this, and he trained ChatGPT to do some grading for him and differentiate instruction for him. So he basically now in his classroom, in the classroom period with his students, all they do is class discussions. Every single day they have a discussion, right? And so he's trying to kind of like flip that classroom experience where they're getting more of that content knowledge from AI or from an outside source at home. And they're really just doing more kind of like deep discussions and learning in the class. So that's just one example. I think it's still going to take a lot of time for more of those examples to bubble up and for schools to like encourage that. So, you know, we talked about that Pandora's box problem. Like, I don't know how many teachers or administrators are willing to allow some of that to happen just yet before we have like great examples to show. In like private schools, I read about a private school in Austin, Texas that is basically having students interact with AI for like 2 hours out of the day. So they're kind of using AI to do like independent learning and research and those sorts of things. We definitely don't know how effective any of this is yet because it's all still so new. But so I would caution anybody to say like this is successful and this isn't in terms of a technique or a strategy or anything like that. But I think we're starting to see pockets and people taking more risks. I was talking with someone from Ingham ISD who is planning in the spring to incorporate the use of AI in CTE programs. So specifically like in a culinary program, I thought that was a really cool idea. Like, you know, that's a really practical skill, like being a chef. So performance rather than like learning is a really natural fit for something like that. Like ChatGPT can help you be like, you know, a recipe collaborator or, you know, a skill builder and things like that for what sorts of skills you might need as a chef. So I'd like to see more of that, like more experimentation so we can kind of highlight some of those examples.
Yeah. We were during the PD that you guys presented to us, one of our sessions, the lady presenting said that she typed into one of the AIs, these are the ingredients I have in my refrigerator. What can I make for dinner? And it like spit out, you know, this could be your main course. This could be your side. Here's this. I was like, wow, that would be quite interesting. And then someone else had mentioned something about like wardrobe, like what should I, you know, take a picture of your closet, you know, what should I wear to school today or something like that. And it gave them ideas. So it's wild to me to think that ChatGPT has only been around for a year now and how much it's advanced just in 12 months. I know we talked about it last week, but what trends do you foresee in the future regarding this? Like where do you see this going? I know it's hard to forecast because it's only been around like this for 12 months, but what do you anticipate and how should teachers prepare for this?
I think what we're going to see pretty soon is schools, I think administrators are already grappling with this. Like they want guidance on what tools that they should allow or maybe even purchase licenses for because they think, you know, there's a net benefit for that. So I think I mentioned KhanMigo or the Khan Academy chatbot. And like, I think you're going to see more purpose-built tools for education and for schools. And schools will start to like purchase those and try to start experimenting with those and integrating them in settings too. The other piece of that I talk a lot about is, what these systems can do when they do have like secure and safe access to data. So I, again, strongly caution against putting any kind of student data into any AI system. But if a school were to buy like enterprise licenses where it could be ensured that that student data was safe and the company wasn't violating the use of any of that data with their access to it, what I think you'll see is like, LMSs and SISs, like if they've got academic records or like extracurricular records for students, those systems will start to like do more like suggesting to school staff, like, hey, this student's really been struggling with these three standards over the last couple weeks. Here's a potential intervention strategy that you could use with them, right? Like,
it's crazy.
And yeah. Right. And
that is incredible.
And hopefully, you know, the teachers, like, you know, it's in line with the teacher's understanding. But again, with a teacher and 30 students, it's really hard to get that really nuanced level of like understanding of all of your students. So I do think there's some potential there as well when it comes to like, you know, how these systems get even more personalized in terms of their recommendations. But I think it's in the short term, every company is going to be promising to do stuff like that. It's just a question of like whether or not they're actually doing it, whether or not they're following through on the benefits that they're trying to sell to schools.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what the future holds with that? There's just so many, like you said, there's been so much change over the last year. Well, all right, Justin, let's start to wrap things up a little bit. Do you have any final pieces of advice for teachers that are either considering incorporating AI into their classroom or maybe some advice for teachers that have been using it? What other pieces of advice do you have for teachers?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's really hard to think about such a potentially big shift. But as much as we can, I just try to encourage an open mind and a spirit of curiosity. I hope I did not come across as like an AI hypester, because I have legitimate concerns about like what some of this is going to mean for teaching and learning, right? I still think we are in a very kind of uncertain state right now. But I would encourage teachers and educators really at any level to just try to keep an open mind, try to approach it with curiosity, try as much as you can to familiarize yourself with some of these tools and some of the trends that are happening and the use around these trends. We basically kind of identify a few different characteristics to have. Adaptability. So the tools are going to change every 6 months to a year. So we're going to need to like update policies and update our own thinking about what kids can and can't do with these tools. Collaboration. So like find somebody in your building who's using these things or who knows about the fact that their students are using them and the discussions they're having with their students, and just try to keep building that spirit of collaboration around this. And the last thing is just intentionality. Like, have a goal in mind if you're going to allow students to use these, or if you want to use them. Like, what are you really trying to accomplish? And then if you use the tools and find that they're not helping you achieve that goal, then stop using them. Like, don't try to force, you know, what's the word, a square peg in a round hole, yep. Right? Like, if it's not working for you and your goals and working with your students, then, you know, it's just another like tool that someone's trying to sell you. So those are the kind of big three things that I hope people kind of approach some of this with.
That's some great advice for us teachers. And, you know, we'll wrap it up there. We're running a little long on time. Jeff, any other final thoughts on AI?
Justin, just thank you so much. I mean, these past 2 weeks listening to these episodes, you know, I think one of the biggest takeaways I had from this is the idea of learning versus performance. And you mentioned it last week, you mentioned it on this episode. And I think as someone who's not really embraced AI, I've got to, you know, the performance output versus the true learning of it. And, you know, if I'm planning to embrace it, I need to figure out, you know, like you said, what is that outcome, that what is it supposed to look like? So thank you for everything, for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
I know Jeff's also excited that he's hoping that AI technology will prevent him from having to grade. He said it's not there yet, but if he can grade those all those five paragraph essays that he has to do.
Shoot, I just wanted to grade the one paragraph. That's fine by me. I mean, anything.
Yeah.
But yeah, thank you so much. This was awesome. So much information. I can't even, like, my brain is spinning right now.
Yeah, and also you definitely didn't come across as a hypester. That's one of the things that stuck out to me when I listened to you speak for the first time, is how you had such an open mind. And I think that's something that all of us teachers need to do, is to continue to have an open mind and, you know, recognize the good and recognize the dangers. Like, it jumped out at me when you said that, yeah, it's kind of funny how the programmers don't even understand how that, you know, why, if you ask them that. And that's just crazy to me. And there's just so much that's unknown about it. So thank you. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thank you for having me. And sorry if I rambled at times, but I appreciate it.
No, it was great. We appreciated both of these conversations. And that's going to wrap up this episode of the Beyond Standards podcast. Please do us a favor, you guys. Give us a like. Give us a subscribe to us. We're trying to build our audience. Reach out to a fellow teacher. Talk about, if you listen to this, if you can mention it to your fellow teachers in the lunchroom, we would really, really appreciate it. Really appreciate that. And next week, please join us next week. We'll be back with a new episode next Monday. We're doing a new segment next Monday. We're going to do, we're calling it the Teacher Helpline. We're going to, get some stories from teachers or some questions that they have or some of those things where they're looking for some advice. And we're going to have a panel of teachers on to give some advice and hopefully help some teachers out in those situations. So if you have a question or a something that might be a good topic for us to address, please reach out and let us know and share that with us. All right, this is Joe and Jeff signing off, reminding you to keep going above and beyond those standards, because you may not make a lot of money, but you do make a difference.